to Canucks Central at noon.
Now works into the high slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime, and he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Pacioretty cut into the slot. Forced wide by Tannen. Play back to the back door. And Markstrom absolutely stoned Paul Stastny.
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650. Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Three more sleeps. That's it. Two more if you just want to watch some qualifying round hockey that does not involve the Vancouver Canucks. But three more sleeps until the Canucks and Wild get after it for real when it's result season. Not subjective, dip your toe in the water, let's see how this guy looks season. No, result season comes this weekend. That calendar turns to August. I don't care how. Just find a way to win. Mick Nizar joins me now. Last night, did it whet your appetite enough for what lies ahead this weekend?
For sure it did, man. It feels like a new season. We got a new show intro. We're all getting psyched up for this return to play on Sunday, but it gets real on Saturday. It did enough for me last night, right? What did we talk about yesterday? Can you get confirmation on a couple of things? And can a couple of guys get flash or show some flashes of what we want to see from them?
And that is what we would ask you, the listener, as well. Sorry to interrupt, Vic, but 650-650. We've got Colby Armstrong coming on in the second half of the show, so I want to get some texts in right now. I want to get some tweets in right now. On your checklist last night, what were you able to check off? What are you concerned about heading into this weekend after what you saw last night? I think it's fair to ask the listeners that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Keep those comments coming in. And, okay, the checklist, I mean, should we start there? Because I think there are a lot of checks. Elias Pettersson is dominant. He's maintained his speed, and you saw a lot of early takeaways, and really all throughout the game. But man, he hounds the puck. It's like that's one of those things that, wow, we really haven't seen that in a long time, and it's one of those things that you forget because we talk about, you know, his dekes and how skilled he is, but his presence defensively really shows.
That's where it begins for me, the high-end talent. Whether you want to talk about Pettersson first or if you want to talk about Besser, who was flying last night, Besser was fast. Besser was getting to the right areas. He didn't have the finish. Some of that is rust, and maybe some of that is confidence. Who knows? But Besser was flying last night, and he has looked very good during the 2 weeks of training camp. He carried that over into last night's game. And while that line didn't always click in the same way that the top line did for the Vancouver Canucks, the top six overall, they had jump pick. They didn't score a goal, but they did so many of those subjective things you wanted to see as a Canucks fan last night.
For sure. And the Brock Besser thing, like, he just looks healthy. I'm trying to think, when was the last time he's had a true off season with no concerns, right? He's always had to recover over something. He bulked up after the back injury, and that kind of looked like it slowed him down. Like, he looks healthy. That's the encouraging part of this, because, you know, the hockey IQ, it's always been there. And the shot, okay, he hasn't scored as much. And, you know, we've talked about, is he really a true one-time type guy? To me, he's a heavy shooter, but I don't know if he's a one-timer type guy. But when you're healthy, right, like, he played with a lot of confidence last night because it felt like he could move freely. He could move unencumbered of any nagging injuries.
Yep, and it's going to get harder come Sunday. We know that the Winnipeg Jets weren't as physical as they could have been, and we know Minnesota is going to try to put a body on those top six for Vancouver. They're going to try to make this a really hard series for those young Canucks. That's what veterans do, Bick. They're going to try to make this hard. But going in with confidence, going in feeling like you're skating really well, that is the big part of the equation for the Vancouver Canucks youngsters.
And like yesterday's game, styles make fights, right? We're talking about this Minnesota series, and Minnesota's going to want to slow it down. Canucks want to play fast. Last night, like that was played at a tempo that I think suits the Canucks, especially for a tune-up game to get as much rust off as you can. Playing a team like Winnipeg, that defensively they have their issues, right? Connor Hellebuyck is basically their version of Jacob Markstrom, right? He gets left out to dry sometimes, and he rescues them a lot of the time. That the tempo at which the Canucks had to play yesterday and had a lot of opportunities to score, that was really encouraging to see that they can ratchet it up. And one of the things I've talked about a lot is when this team gets to the playoffs, it's hard to play at a certain standard for 82 games. Kevin Bieksa mentioned that yesterday when he joined the starting lineup. It's hard to play at a certain standard for 82 games, but if you can do so in a sprint like the playoffs, it mitigates some of those physical attributes that you might be deficient in, like speed and like physicality. Everyone slowly kind of works their way back towards the middle in the playoffs of we see how similar teams are. With that effort level that you're constantly giving, which we saw last night, that to me checks a lot of boxes for where the Canucks are.
Thank Gretzky they're not playing Connor Hellebuyck. Thank Gretzky for that, man. That guy owns them. He's owned a lot of teams this year. That is maybe the best news goaltending-wise coming out of last night's game. They do not have to face him in the qualifying round, and there is no chance if both teams advance they would have to face him in the next round either.
You know what's madness, too? It's he didn't make the classic like highlight reel lunge and dive and two pad stack saves. He was just in the right spot all the time. And when we talk to goalie guys, it's always, do you move prior to the puck arriving to a shooter? And are you in place prior? You know, so you have to do less work. He made it look so efficient because those were not easy saves. And those were not poor scoring chances. Those were quality scoring chances. And he's like a house. He's there challenging the shooter. He's there in time. He's taking up a lot of space. Man, like that is, you don't get carried away on some sort of exhibition performance, but that is as impressive as you can play for an exhibition game.
Well, it's not just the exhibition performance. It's the fact that he's going to win the Vezina, and of the 18-plus, I don't know how many goalies we've seen now. It's over 20 now because a couple of teams have switched goalies in the first couple of days to give everybody a shot. Of the 20-plus goalies we've seen, nobody's looked more dialed in than him.
No, for sure. I mean, you talked to Calgary for 2 hours. What was the reaction? Was there a lot of concern of, oh, my goodness, this is the guy we got to go up against?
Well, I did put that out there. Are you more concerned about the Flames goaltending decision or having to beat Hellebuyck? And more people came in on the Hellebuyck side of things than anything else. And the goal that beats him, of course, is a greasy one last night. And look, Jacob Markstrom wasn't bad, but he wasn't at the level we saw Markstrom perform at during the course of the year. I don't think that's a big cause for concern. I think it's fairly natural to see that kind of performance. I just didn't think he was quite as sharp as he is when he's at his best.
Well, it's the inverse of what we're talking about, right? We're looking for check marks. You didn't want to see the red X over anybody, right? If Jacob Marks or if anyone was average, it's okay, man. It's the exhibition game. It's about getting your timing back. And I thought Jacob Markstrom was, he was only okay. You just didn't have to put a red X next to his name, and that's fine. Not everyone was going to get the green check.
No, not everyone was going to get the green check. And some of those X's or incompletes fall in the bottom six for the Vancouver Canucks or on the blue line for the Vancouver Canucks. And I don't think many of those X's or incompletes are going to be costly. In fact, I can only see one being costly. That is probably the same lineup we see on Sunday, Bic. But if there is one change to that lineup, what do you think it could be?
Are we talking of what I would do or what's realistic?
Realistic.
I don't know if there is a realistic one.
I see one realistic change. I'm not saying it'll happen. I'm saying it's realistic. Yes. That is a realistic change that could happen before Sunday. It's not going to wow anybody. Nobody's going to be saying, all right, good for you. No, that's not what people say. But Brandon Sutter did not play very well last night. Now, his versatility as a center as well as a winger might end up being what pushes him into the lineup. But if it was based on last night's game, you could easily make the case that the coach says, Louis had a better camp overall. We're going to put him in there on the fourth line role.
The thing with Brandon Sutter is, and there's no value there, right? You're not getting value out of him. But we've talked about, if you're in a bottom six role, like Louis Erickson has had, right? You can provide something. You're never going to get maximized on the contract, right? The thing with Sutter, though, is, and I've defended him in playing in a bottom six role. It's not the biggest, like the end of the world. But he just didn't look like he was moving well. And if he's not moving well, then like that takes away from a lot of his game where, you know, he is a smart player. He knows how to battle. He knows how to win along the boards. And if he looks uncomfortable moving, how are you supposed to, you know, maximize your skill set? And that's where the concern comes for me. It's not even so much about how he played. It's just he didn't look fresh.
I will be surprised if the move the fans want to see is the one that happens. And the move the fans want to see is Jake Virtanen in and Brandon Sutter up.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll be surprised if that's the play. I won't be surprised if we see Jake Virtanen in this series. In fact, I'll be surprised if we don't. I think he's going to play in this series. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he's going to play game one. There's a couple of different things to get into with this. I thought Brian Burke laid it out well, that, yeah, it was more about what they see as the upside for Michael Ferland going into this series as opposed to something Jake did wrong. But it is also fair to say he was outperformed over the past 2 weeks by both Michael Ferland and Zach MacEwen in this particular camp. Now, he may represent greater upside than Zach MacEwen, and relative to a healthy Michael Ferland or not, we can debate that. But right now, in that three-horse race, Jake was the third-best player over the last 2 weeks. Now, he might be better in the playoffs if he gets that opportunity. He might be better in this qualifying round if he gets that opportunity. But I don't think he's starting this series, Bick.
No, and look, he will play playoff games. There will be injuries. There will be, you know, something that occurs that enables him to get into the lineup. So game one does not mean he's going to miss game 18 if you know, should they get that far. And the one other thing with Virtanen, and I saw this a lot yesterday, and you know, I guess this week too, a lot of it has been said. I was like, how do you keep a 20 goal scorer out of the lineup? You know how? Because there's a potential 30 goal scorer on the first two lines. There's a 40 point player on the third line. That's how it goes. And he, you know, he's just crested kind of that conversation of being a 20 goal scorer, 40 point kind of guy. That's just happened. And, you know, we talk about getting confirmation, right? That's confirmation. It's still a projection to see what he brings to the playoffs. It's still a projection to see of is he consistent enough to be that guy? And coaches are going to rely on confirmation. We've said this a lot about Tyler Mott, right? Tyler Mott's an inferior player to Jake Virtanen, but you know what you're getting from Tyler Mott every single night. He might give you a 6.5 out of 10 performance every single night, but the hustle is going to be there. You drew a penalty yesterday, just sheer work ethic. And coaches like knowing what they're putting out on the ice every single time. They don't want to have a guy go over the board and be like, oh, I hope I get this type of performance for these next 45 seconds to a minute. No, they want to know what they're getting every single time. And that's been the flaw for Virtanen.
Brandon in Coquitlam says, unpopular opinion, Louis should be in for Sutter. I don't even think that's an unpopular opinion. I think that the bulk of Canucks fans, Bick, classify these two players in the exact same manner, so it's like part for like part. I don't think that would be a terribly unpopular opinion in Canuck Nation.
No, I don't think so at all. And I guess they're one and the same type of player, right, because they're going to be playing that wing role and it's a defensive responsibility. The expectation, though, is you get a bit more physicality out of Brandon Sutter, but you get defensive presence out of Louis Erickson, right? There's no slippage there. The thing that's, I'll go back to it, the thing that's concerning is, like, Brandon Sutter, you just didn't look like you were moving. And I get he was held out a couple of practices during camp, but that's the alarming part moving forward. It's how well are you able to skate? And he is an okay skater. He's not poor by any means. He's got power. He's got some speed. And he can play with some good balance and strength. If that's gone, your value is seriously diminished.
This one comes in. You guys are talking like we're going to play more than three games. Come on. Nothing about this leads me to believe the Canucks are going to score a goal, let alone win a game. Wild going to sweep us and shut us out in all three games. That has been a consistent text. And this is this texter in particular who doesn't sign his or her text. I'm not sure if it's a man or a woman. But this texter in particular has long been a fan of blowing this operation up from the general manager through the head coach and the roster. So I'm not surprised by that text. There are some concerns. It's fair to have concerns about the Canucks. And I've said all week, I think that too many people are underestimating the opponent here. I think it's going to be a tough series, Bick.
Yeah, and the Wild, didn't look spectacular in their own right, I guess, against Colorado. But
eight power plays. They had eight power plays in that game. Yeah. I don't think we're going to see that too often in this round.
Yeah, we'll see how officials handle it. Yeah, like the Wild are a good team. Like, of the 24 teams here, there's basically four that you wouldn't say are, like, good teams. Like, everyone's got flaws, but some teams have enough of a strength to overcome their flaw. The Wild, yeah, they don't have a lot of star power, but they're just solid throughout their whole lineup. And being average has value. Being the type of team that doesn't make a lot of mistakes has value. It's they're consistent. They are solid, especially with that top four. And Carson Soucy's getting a lot of love recently too. So top five, you want to say. They're just professional, right? And what was interesting is hearing some of the comments from, you know, Brock Besser during the intermission. Just like Winnipeg played a really simple professional game. That's what they did, and that's what he wants the Canucks to do as well. They're going to need to do that. At times, they tried to get a bit, you know, too creative, too, you know, outside their heads. And you see the goal, that greasy goal. That's what this team was built on. That's what Jim Benning wants: more tip-in goals, more rebound goals, more getting to the net. Yes, the skill is great, and you need a certain baseline. But this team was built. That's why they got Michael Ferland to be in that gritty area to try to convert chances.
In many ways, and I know the analogy doesn't work for the playoffs, but the Minnesota Wild, to me, are in many ways like the Tennessee Titans. We often make NFL-NHL comparisons.
Sure, sure.
Like, if you don't show up and play, they'll beat you. But if you bring your best, there are certainly obvious ways that you can beat them, and there are advantages you have. But if you don't, you can't just get by this team by playing all right. You're going to have to play well to get past a team like Minnesota.
Yes, and that's the thing that Travis Green has harped on so much, right? You need to be able to play for 60 minutes. The Canucks are not the type of team. They're not Tampa Bay Lightning, where they can go out and just dominate for 20 minutes and coast the other 40. They're not at that stage yet. They don't have Cirelli playing on their third line. They don't have that. So how do you, you know, make up that difference? You do it by effort level. You do it by extracting all of your potential and putting it on the ice. And if they do that, if they play to a certain standard for 60 minutes, even 50, 55, whatever it is, they can get by the Minnesota Wild. The talent differential is in favor of the Vancouver Canucks. They should be able to get by Minnesota. They had a nice run there with Edison, obviously, but that was a team that was kind of left in the dust. They should be able to overcome Minnesota in four games.
Some of it comes down to goaltending. Alex Stalock, if he's the guy who gets a start, it's still an interesting decision that Evason has to make to start this series, because Dubnyk stopped everything he saw yesterday. Now, he didn't have as many five alarm chances against him, and the Avs had the lead at that point, and there's a team that doesn't have a lot to play for in an exhibition tune-up because they're simply going into the seeding portion of this tournament. But Dubnyk stopped everything. Stalock allowed three. I don't really know it matters that much which guy it is to start this series, Vic. Question is, can you get something early, especially against this top four on D? And I heard Dan Riccio talking about this morning, and I do believe Canucks fans will come to this same conclusion as well, as they look more at the Minnesota Wild and focus less on their own team, that if they can roll that top four out there and play them big minutes all the time, it's going to be tough shift in, shift out.
The Minnesota top four.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like, that's the strength of this team. And we've talked about what tempo this series is going to be at. That's going to be the key. If Minnesota's top four dominates, then it tips in the favor for them. There's only a handful. I'm not even sure. You know, handful is probably too generous as well. There's maybe two to three forwards I'm looking at and saying they can control the outcome of the series for Minnesota. It's Fiala, it's Zuccarello, and it's maybe Eric Sinek, you know, with his overall play. But defensively, the reasons Minnesota would win this series all stem from how that top four play. And the reasons the Canucks would win this series all stem from how the top six plays. And by and large, you know, yesterday the top six was phenomenal. What Bo Horvat did yesterday, his line, should not get overlooked. I know Brock Besser got a lot of the hype because of the scoring chances, but look at the scoring chances against. Bo Horvat did a great job yesterday, and that should not go unrecognized.
Viking Stat says, I hope the Canucks win, and I know they can, but I pick Minnesota to win the series only because they play with such structure, which in a short series after a long layoff, I think favors those types of teams.
And those are the types of teams that Canucks have struggled against throughout the season. The teams that are highly organized, highly structured, that require long bouts of puck possession to try to break them down. The Canucks are, you know, want to play fast. We've seen that. They want to hit you on the break when you are trying to get set up and trying to get organized. And that's why a guy like Michael Ferland is so interesting, because he can play along the boards. He can have prolonged stretches of possession on his line. We saw with like McEwen and Roussel and Gaudette when that worked very briefly, their puck possession numbers went significantly higher, right? Because they are more down low style of players. That with Vertanen on that line, you have more speed, yes, but once you get into the kind of that half court offense, how useful is that speed? It's more about short area quickness, and can you, you know, create leverage? Can you get someone on your hip and start working your way towards the net? With Ferland, he does all those things. So that line is really interesting to me in a slow down pace of a series.
Biggest takeaways, if you want to just go unit by unit, top six look good. You should check that off last night. Bottom six needs to make more of an impact beginning on Sunday. Wasn't impactful enough for the Canucks in that hockey game. On defense, we saw some of the traits that have plagued this team. Sometimes they have trouble getting out of their own zone. They have trouble with defensive zone coverage. We saw that on a couple of occasions last night. Wasn't a good night overall for Troy Stetcher last night. I know some people were pointing at Fantenberg as well on the back end. I know you wanted to have the Fantenberg-Ulevi conversation before we got to Colby Armstrong.
Yeah, like, okay. Fantenberg's going to play game one, right? And he's the guy.
Yes,
and it's going to be very difficult for Olli Ulevi to unseat him. I guess my question is, because when you're a depth guy, and really you're the last guy on the roster, basically, I do try to look at every single player and I say, what are you best at? Like, what's the reason that you are in the lineup? And I thought about Oscar Fantenberg, and I couldn't come to a conclusion. I just kind of posed it to everyone. I was like, what is he best at in your mind? In your eyes, when you watch Oscar Fantenberg play, what is the thing that he's hanging his hat on? And I think his best trait is his shot. And, okay, I guess then my two follow-up questions would be like, A, how valuable is that for your 6th D-man who's not on the power play? And B, is that what you need out of that last guy? Do you want more responsibility? I'm just not sure what his best trait is. And if we can't come to a consensus on that, or if we don't have a general prevailing opinion, it's really like, it's there for the taking for Olli Ulevi.
Is it though? Because much in the same conversation of what's being argued about with who should be on the 4th line wing spot, they're looking for something in particular in that 6D spot right now. Mm-hmm. And the reason Fantenberg is in the lineup right now is because he scores somewhere between 6 of 8 on a bunch of things that you want in a defenseman, and he's relatively quiet, if you will. We talked about how the Canucks can play a noisy game at times and how the Minnesota Wild play a quiet game. Fantenberg's relatively quiet. There aren't these big gaffes, and there aren't these superseding plays that happen during the course of the game as well. He's generally in the right spot. You disagree?
Yeah, that Fantenberg-Myers pairing has been, it wasn't just a disaster last night, it has been a disaster throughout the season.
Well, we can talk about the pairing, but if we're just talking about the player in particular, you think there's a lot of noise to his game?
Yes. There are
okay, we can disagree. That's fine.
Like, out of position. I think he's okay. Yeah. This isn't a crusade of how bad he is. It just, he's an okay player, right? He's valued at what he is. He gets paid for what he is. And that's what you're going to get out of, you know, 6th D-man. It's the same conversation we had with Alex Biega. But to me, Alex Biega could skate the puck on his own. Like, that was a valuable trait that I would say is worth having as a 6th D-man. And he could hang his hat on something. It's the reason why you could say, oh, I don't want to take him out of the lineup because of this. I don't know what that answer is for Oscar Fantenberg. And I look at Ogilvie, who's you know, by all accounts, supposed to be a good processor, can make a first pass. We saw a couple of those yesterday. Like, that, to me, has just as much value as the overall game to Oscar Fantenberg.
Fair enough. But here's what I think this ultimately comes down to. It comes down to this with that particular position. Okay, are we going to see a major gaffe that costs us from this player? And I think they answer that question no more often than not with Fantenberg than the other parts that they could put in there right now.
Yeah, and that's why...
That's their belief. You
know, not trying to die on this hill, but I just wanted to explore the conversation. Just of, we've seen a lot of Oscar Fantenberg, obviously, this season, and I'm just not sure, like, what's the reason you have to keep him in the lineup? That's, like... That's the question I wanted answered. We saw, what, 37, 36 games out of him this year? And through the course of it, you know, it's not the biggest sample size, but I'm just not sure what his best trade is. If you know, 650, 650.
Speaking of Sportsnet 650, this segment of Sportsnet 650 is presented by Western Forest Products. Do you like the idea of living and working on Vancouver Island? Western Forest Products is hiring various timber harvesting positions and certified tradesmen. Visit westernforest.com/careers. Colby Armstrong was part of the panel last night. He's part of this show next. Canucks Central, on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Is this ding on? Word.
So what, we get drunk. So what, we don't sleep.
I said, well, and I was really happy with Ole playing in his first NHL game. Thought he did a lot of good things. He maybe nervous the first shift, but he settled right in. Played well.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. So what, I keep them
rolled up, sagging my pants, not caring what I show. Theme song for this weekend, maybe? A lot of hockey to watch. No sleep there. What are you going to do while you watch it?
Urfa called the Canucks. Or at least the run this Canucks are about to go on should be young. Should be called Young, Wild, and Free. So I think Dom's making a reference there.
That's what Urf called it? Or that's what Urf called himself?
Yeah. Yes. The answer to any of those questions is yes.
Yeah, thank you very much. Vic Nizar, Scott Rintoul with you. Colby Armstrong set to join us in just a couple of minutes' time. This question came in, Vic, just at the tail end of last segment, 650, 650, if you want in on the program. Does the score line actually reflect how they played yesterday? My answer is no. 4-1 does not indicate how the Canucks played.
No, of course not. Connor Hellebuck indicated how the score line went. But no, it's exhibition. If they lost 7-1, we shouldn't be too concerned. But it's how you played, right? And they didn't need to have a 60-minute effort. We talked about it. Just provide the flashes. Michael Ferland had, you know, a hit early on in the game, and you thought, okay, he can bring that. Pettersson had his typical defensive prowess was shown. Besser, he was probably the most consistent performer last night, but he looked fast. He looked healthy, all of that. The main takeaway of what carried over from the regular season to last night was puck management. We saw it, and they had some issues dealing with that. So I look at that and I say, like, that's the thing that has to get cleaned up more than anything. But overall, like, they looked panicked defensively in moments that brought panic, in moments that, like, they turned the puck over and they had to reevaluate and they had to readjust. When they were actually set up, I thought they were okay.
Man, early in that game, when the Canucks were controlling the majority of the play, I'll tell you this. There were a couple of what looked to be high-end opportunities. Quinn Hughes, just with how smart he is with his stick, he just diffused them. And he didn't do anything physically, but man, the way he used his stick in the defensive zone on a couple of plays with some high-end players like Mark Scheifele, man, that impressed me last night, Bick.
I should say, yeah, you know, like, didn't mention his game overall. The thing I'm looking for from Quinn Hughes more so than anything is confidence. And he's already brimming with a lot of it, obviously. But on the ice, you know, do you go back and watch what you did over the past 68 games and try to, you know, make adjustments? And because he's got room to grow. Like, that's the scary part. And that's the encouraging part. He does have room to grow. And you see moments like that. And you think, okay, he's applying what he needs to work on. it's a great point to pick out what he did early on in the game.
Well, if there's anybody who understands it, it's a guy who played exactly like Quinn Hughes, which is why we bring Colby Armstrong, Sportsnet analyst, onto this program. How are you today, Colby?
Thanks for the nice compliment. Yeah, I appreciate that. Good to be with you guys.
Hey, they don't call him the Colby Armstrong of the Western Conference here in Vancouver for anything.
Oh, man, the poor guy. Yeah, you got to give a little more credit to that. Yeah, talking about Quinn Hughes, obviously, and confidence, and, you know, and I think, you know, it was cool really watching him last night, and something I had just do out of fear sometime is escapability, really, in his zone, ability to break up a play and just get it out of trouble just with his legs, even though there's guys around. It's a high pressure threshold. He just doesn't panic. He's in it. He knows his legs can get him out of there. And I think you'll see him gain in that as he gets more into game shape, as everyone else is trying to do.
Well, like a lot of Vancouver's high-end, I think he epitomized what we saw from the Canucks last night. Their skill guys, their top six, their high-end D-men like Quinn Hughes, they were very good last night from a subjective point of view, even though they didn't score a whole lot of goals. If there were questions, they came elsewhere on the roster. What were your takeaways after analyzing that game last night?
Yeah, great. For me, great start, good first period. Everything looked to be going fairly well. And then, you know, the foot's off the gas a little and a little bit of dip in play. And for the most part, I thought in the first period and through a little bit of the third period towards the end as they were trailing, you know, that puck possession, forecheck game, you know, that was there. And that really gave, you know, the Jets a hard time. And when I think back to the regular season of what they are and what they were, they were just, you know, I wouldn't say uber polished in all aspects of the game. They're not that kind of team right now. They're a young, you know, hungry. They play an in-your-face aggressive style of game, whether it's in the D zone or the offensive zone. It leads to success with a lot of the skill players that they have. But you know, you saw that in spurts last night, especially in the first period. And then just like rust, right? Like just rusty plays. We saw on the power play, you know, Pettersson looking up to the rafters. We've only seen him do that probably a few times through his young career so far. But just the hunger that he has in that position with that lethal shot, that he knew that it was right there. And maybe if he was in a little more mid-season form, that is perfectly in the top corner. And I thought Brock Besser got quite a few opportunities. Obviously, the breakaway, creating his own in the offensive zone, moving his feet across the top, missing the net where, you know, Hellebuck could not see the puck at all. If he literally would have hit that half of the net, it was a goal. But creating chances and getting opportunities. So, it was your typical preseason game. And I said on the broadcast last night, guys, like, you know, rust is funny. Like, you understand that you're rusty. You understand that, you know, everyone's kind of in the spot where you're in real games. You're not in intra-squad games. You're not at camp. And you're going to have to find that level and ramp it up. But at the same time, now that you just did your one preseason game, you know, in Brock Besser's case, you missed a couple opportunities. Obviously, I know like a confident guy probably and understands what he can do. And, okay, we'll get him next time. But when you're laying in bed in your bubble going, okay, that was it. I missed those chances. And you're replaying it over and over in your head. And you're kind of thinking, okay, I'm just a little bit rusty. But you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, we're starting this weekend. Like, it's for real coming right up. Like, I don't have three more preseason games to kind of shake that in-game stuff off. So it's a good thing, I think, that they can go, okay, we did some really good things. We felt kind of good in certain areas. We had a lull at times in these areas. But it's also another thing that you only had one kick at the can, and it's on from here now, here on out. So, rust is a bad thing. It's a frustrating thing, guys.
Well, we've done this for long enough, and usually in the preseason, like a true preseason, we kind of just scoff at the listeners that call in and fans of, oh, we're really concerned. It's like, it's a preseason. Calm down. Yeah. Right? Like, they'll figure this out by game 20. But I felt like last night it kind of flirted with the line of a real game, of a regular season game, and a preseason game. So, like, what is fair to take away from a game like last night?
I think it's fair to take away the good stuff and don't take any of the bad stuff out of it. That's what I'd be trying to do. And I'm sure that's what the coaching staff is likely trying to do. You know, and maybe it's also the true physicality of a game, too, when we saw their lull and, you know, the pace get ramped up on the Jets side after that first period. And, you know, you can look at the score, but you can also look at quality of play and just kind of what you did in certain moments or what you did in certain aspects of your game. And I think you're going to have a lot of teams after it going, we did a couple things good, but we really did a lot of things bad or that we're not used to right now. So it's, you know, I would just be totally trying if I was there saying we did some good things, this is what we did good. We have to improve on this. We know that, but we only have one exhibition game. So this is what we are. Let's just be sharp.
I've looked at a few of these games and I've been pretty impressed with the intensity level from a tune-up game. And I kind of just likened it to, like, these guys are just naturally competitive, right? You, like, athletes are just, they're different from us in so many different ways, but they have that extra little competitive switch that we shouldn't have been too concerned about the quality of play of this tournament, because they're going to know how to ratchet up pretty quick.
Yeah, like the first couple games the other day, and I think it's hard coming out of the gates. Like, I wasn't overly thrilled with the Penguins-Flyers game for whatever reason. It just was like, it felt like a tiptoe-y exhibition game. Like, let's just get to the weekend and be ready. You know, we'll work on a few things here and there. But we saw just some kind of flat play a little bit. And then later on that night, we got to the Battle of Alberta, and it was like through the roof right off the bat. I was like, here we go. All right, let's go. And you know, there's teams scoring goals and they're not celebrating. I'm like, did that go in? And I hear crowd noise. And I'm like, are they cheering a save or was that a goal? Like, it's kind of all confusing just because of that exhibition feel. And I just, you know, I'm thinking, like, when this gets ramped up on the weekend, it's for real. Are we going to see, like, these celebrations and that, you know, when the crowd is absolutely going nuts, celebrations or, like, is it going to be like that just all of a sudden? So it was nice to see, though, that really a lot of these teams weren't dipping their toe in the water to get a feel and just get it to the weekend. Like, they were saying, you know what, we got to flip the switch right now. You know, we've got to put our best foot forward and play, you know, playoff type hockey so that we're ready, you know, come the weekend. And I thought we saw some real competitive games and some real intense games and some games where I think that level of play was there, where I was sitting on the couch going, man, this is exciting. Like, this is real. They're showing it right now. So I think we'll see it that amped up that much more come this weekend, obviously.
Colby Armstrong was on the broadcast last night of the Canucks and Jets. He'll be all over Sportsnet's coverage as the playoffs get rolling, the qualifying round gets rolling this weekend. He joins us here on Canucks Central. You know as well as I do the big story for Canucks fans heading into last night's game, and it persisted afterwards, Jake Virtanen not being in the lineup. What is your view on that, sir?
Well, my view is, look, there's a certain type of player, right? And you know, you have an identity of what each player is and where they belong in your lineup. And, you know, then you take a snapshot of what you got over the last few weeks of camp and you try to make some analysis of where guys fit in. And from all accounts, you know, they like the camp of Ferland. And I think he's a guy that I've always liked. I've always liked that Vancouver got him. I just like, you know, the possibility of the presence and the really like unicorn style of play that he could be. And particularly in a playoff series, right? Like that's where he kind of, you know, stamped his name in Calgary against the Canucks as a guy that can be a major turning point disruptor / contributor, you know, to your club. And the fact that he's been through so much with his concussions and injury and time missed, like you really want to get a look at him and you want to put him in a spot where it's his spot, you know, and, you know, I'd say he's, you know, could he play top six? Yeah, likely if we saw him a little more, but you want to see him in a spot. And so they make a decision to switch, and Jim Benning came on and David Amber asked him some questions about that. And, you know, not to read into it too much. And, you know, so could we see both of them in the lineup, and could what is happening today be different tomorrow? Absolutely. Especially with this type of scenario with the playoff setup that it is. But I like giving Ferland the opportunity. You brought him in to be this guy. He's had unfortunate circumstances, but you got to give him a shot to be that guy. You got to give him a shot to be the guy that I think everyone in hockey thinks he can be come playoff time.
Colby, when you look at this series overall, yes, goaltending matters. Yes, coaching matters. But as far as stylistically between these two teams, how do you see this series unfolding?
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, I saw Pedersen's line really ramp it up yesterday. Like, Pedersen's engine was going in the first, right? Like, we saw the end-to-end rush. We saw him down low picking off plays, creating turnovers, quick bang-bang plays off of those. And I think Minnesota, and traditionally and usually, they're going to want to be more of like a team on the walls, push it to the walls, kind of get it ugly in the gutter a little bit, you know, just kicking it up and down the walls, make it a little bit harder and clogged up that way. That's just kind of their identity with the, you know, the way they play. Hard on the forecheck, hard on the walls, creating off of those situations. And, you know, to see, you know, with the way Vancouver can play with their ability to transition, one, with their D that can skate and move pucks up, and their ability, you know, watching Pedersen down low and the way he competes in battles, he's going to have to get used to that when you're talking about the likes of Suter and Spurgeon likely matched up against their line, you know, for 20 some minutes a night, every shift, you know, that they're going to be a tough tandem to play against, especially down low in the offensive zone. So that's what I think it's going to look like. They're going to try to dictate Minnesota will, their forecheck and their play along the walls and pushing pucks along the walls and, you know, making it tough and grimy. And so, you know, can the Canucks, you know, with their speed and skill, get out of there and create in the offensive zone and create off of a clogged up, you know, below the dots in the offensive zone to create plays. So I think that's where we'll see it. And we'll see if they can find success. Can the Canucks doing that from the D zone right to the offensive zone?
I just want to cycle back something about the Ferland-Vertanen conversation, because one of the cases people make is, okay, Vertanen's speed is an asset just in general. I kind of make the case, though, that, you know, when we get to the playoffs, everyone's given their max effort. At least you would hope everyone's given their max effort. And over the course of 82, you can't really do that. And so speed becomes an issue. But in the playoffs, does that kind of get mitigated because everyone's maximizing their performances?
Yeah, I think speed's important. I think situational play is important too, and where you want certain guys and aspects of the way your team looks. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, a team that I think Ferland, you know, would fit in well playing against in Minnesota to start with. Not that I'm saying like Vertanen's a pushover, like he has a physical aspect to his game as well. And I'd like to probably see a little bit more from him, in that department. But I mean, 18 goals this year, we saw him. You know, we know he can shoot the puck. We know what kind of player he can be. At times he leaves you wanting more, but definitely an option where I think, like, you know, there's going to, whether it's a short leash with the lineup or in certain situations or plays, but I think you can always fall back on going, man, we have these guys in these situations, and, you know, we can always use his speed, his skill, and I guess his a little bit of rambunctiousness when he decides to make it happen. But Vertanen, I think I like Vertanen. He's a good player. It's just you got to find spots for your guys. And, you know, as of, I don't know what they said to him, but as of, you know, the preseason game, the exhibition game, he was a guy watching. So we'll see what happens when they roll out their lineup over the weekend. But I got to think Ferland will be in there after they got to look at him in this exhibition game, and they'll reassess and say, yeah, we like him in that spot, or we don't.
You guys start writing jokes on that chalkboard you got behind you on the TV there.
Yeah, I know. I was wondering what to do with that. I was cleaning up and trying to get it all situated. I was hoping my kids didn't walk in. Thank goodness the game started at 10:30 Eastern time here, so they were in bed. It could be pose another issue altogether when I'm doing some earlier games. But I just put that on there just for fun, but we'll see what it turns into as the playoffs go on. But a fun little prop, and I get to get a little creative with it and just sit there all night. So maybe take some advice on things I can, maybe fan shout outs or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you could do fan shout outs. You could put like a mystery stat on there and people have to figure out what it actually is. Yeah. There could be random Colby Armstrong trivia on there. There's so many things you could do.
I have a lot of options, pictures. You could tape up there. I don't know. It just came to me last night. I'm like, you know what? I'll do this. Stack some books next to it so I look like a scholar a little bit, even though they were like kiddie nighttime bedtime story books. But at the same time, I don't know, it was interesting for my first night in there, guys. I will say it's being out of the studio is totally different. So it's something I think everyone doing it now that is from home, and Kelly and Cassie you know, have to get used to, and the communication factor. So it's interesting times right now, but I'm glad we've got hockey back and we can be on there.
Well,
start writing some recipes. You must be a cook.
share my dinner recipe from the night. Yeah, that'll be. I don't know if there's enough room on that chalkboard for the amount of food I'm eating these days, but yeah, some good ideas to toss around. We'll see what transpires on the old chalkboard these playoffs.
Bick clearly didn't listen to the conversation you and I had earlier this week, Colby, where you told me about your. You're, you know, just how good you are with laundry, and you can write laundry tips on there.
I can change the world with my laundry tips, absolutely. And
laundry professional, Colby Armstrong.
Yeah,
I love it.
No better than hockey fans to teach them how to, you know, maybe for once watch their favorite hockey jersey. How about that?
Sounds perfect, buddy. Thank you very much for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the hockey this weekend, man. Get rested up. You're going to need some stamina.
Absolutely. I had a 10:30 game last night. That's the time I've been going to bed. So we're back on. I'm ready to go. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. That is Colby Armstrong, one of our favorites here. Likes to laugh. Certainly loves his hockey there, Bick as well. And, hey, he sees the contrasting styles. And he said that to me yesterday when he was talking about other series as well. Styles make fights. And who gets to own the style of this series between the Canucks and the Wild as much as anything else?
Yeah, man. Can you impart your identity onto another team, right? So much of sports is that, right? Can you, and I hate using this term because it's so extreme, but like, can you break the will of your opponent? And usually it's thinner margins than that, but if the Canucks are able to do that and they're able to play exactly what Colby, the opposite of what Colby was talking about, you know, Minnesota wants to muck it up along the boards, and the Canucks are capable of doing that, but that's not their forte. Their forte is playing in space, playing with speed. If they're able to do that, then it should be one of those series that they get through relatively easily because of what we've talked about. The talent disparity favors the Canucks.
Well, you said something that I don't think is going to play into this series whatsoever. Relatively easy. I don't think there's going to be anything relatively easy about it. I don't. I think this is going to be a tough series.
Okay. By that, I mean the amount of games. Right? Like, it could be. If the Canucks play their, if the series turns into the type of style or the type of game the Canucks want to play, they should be able to do this in 3 or 4 games.
I don't see it. I don't see this being it.
Again, we're just talking if that happens. Now, if it gets mucked up and I think the series goes 5, 4 or 5, but that's assuming that Minnesota is going to be able to play their way too. And it's really just a question of who's going to be able to execute their game plan more so than the other.
Questions we can continue to answer tomorrow, and you can continue to answer next. Do I know your co-host, sir?
You do know him. He's a North fan legend.
Israel Fair.
There you go. He's filling in today. Big shout out to Katie Caldwell the last couple of days. But she's busy today with the Dallas Cowboys. So, unable to join us. So Israel Fair joins us from 1 to 4 on Sportsnet today. Pete Blackburn is going to join us, as well as your voice of the Vancouver Canucks, Brendan Batchelor.
Beautiful. Have a great show, buddy. This segment of Sportsnet 650 and Canucks Central was presented by Western Forest Products. Do you like the idea of living and working on Vancouver Island? Western Forest Products, hiring various timber harvesting positions and certified tradesmen. Visit westernforest.com/careers. Vic and Izzy up next. Dom Stramati's back at Mission Control. Great job on Canucks Central. He will take you through in the afternoon as well. I will talk to you tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., right here on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.